Hello, beautiful people, and welcome to the Invisible to Invincible podcast, helping you find your inner confidence. It's hosted by me, Rebecca Allen, and you can find me on pretty much any social media at Rebecca Allen with four A's in between. Today, I'm going to focus on anxiety, specifically health anxiety, which is something I've really been suffering with for the last year. It has been almost a year since my last podcast, so it feels really strange being back on here. I've had kind of a year of just a lot to deal with, which I talk about a lot on my posts on Instagram, and hopefully on here now too. I think what last year taught me needed a little bit of time to process and some space away from social media, which I really took that space. I took that time, I went within. I qualified as a yoga teacher, which is super exciting, and I've got an app coming out hopefully this year to do with that. And I am doing loads of work on psychology, psychotherapy, lots of stuff that probably wouldn't have happened had I not had a rubbishy year. So I'm very grateful for the lessons it taught me, but I was pretty overwhelmed and took some time out from the things I really love doing, which one of those is podcasting. Anyway, getting to the point, waffle waffle. I want to talk about kind of one of the sore points of last year, and there's two sore points, being this and my miscarriage, and whether my anxiety was made worse as a result of my miscarriage that happened sort of a few months before my breakdown, or whether it had nothing to do with it, I don't know. But they were sort of two major points in last year which really changed the course of everything for me, really. And the reason I'm sharing this is partly for my own cathartic purposes. I find so much peace comes from talking on here and expressing, telling my story of what's happened, but also because during that period of my life, during my sort of breakdown as it ended up being, I felt like I was the only person in the world who was experiencing that at that time. And obviously I wasn't in the frame of mind where I was able to even acknowledge what was happening to me and what I was going through. But if perhaps you are self-aware enough and you are on it with your anxiety and you know what's going on and you just need somebody to relate to, then let me be that person for you today, because I needed that. And I had absolutely no idea I even had health anxiety. I knew that I was anxious, but I couldn't pinpoint it. And at the time, I thought it was just a result of my physical aftermath of having COVID. So, where do we start? From the beginning. So I've always been an anxious person. I've kept diaries since I could write, which was pretty young. And my youngest diaries are called Pinky and Purpley, I think. And I can't even read the writing in them. I can just grasp words, and they are all around feeling lonely, feeling anxious, feeling left out, worried about the world ending, worried about dying, worried about X, Y, and Z. And there has always been a huge amount of anxiety in who I am. So that has always been part of me. And I perhaps didn't really acknowledge that until this year, until I got to absolute breaking point. But I think it's worth noting that this is probably a build-up of a really, really long time of having anxiety and suffering from that. I was going to wait a little while to get into somatic research and somatic therapy, but I'm not going to wait. I'm going to hit you with it straight now, because my memory isn't really there. So we'll just start now. Somatic experiencing, somatic therapy, somatic relating really is talking about how the body reacts to psychological symptoms, psychological experiences and stresses and trauma. So one of the things that we talk about in somatic therapy, which isn't necessarily for everybody, but I found it really interesting, is to do with your birth story. So just food for thought there for anybody who might be interested in looking into somatic therapy, somatic experiencing, is looking at what kind of birth story you had, whether you had any birth trauma. And there is research backed up about this. I'm not going to add it in the links because I've read it in a book that I'm reading at the minute, which is called I'm Okay, You're Okay, which is brilliant. It's about, can't think of the name of it now, transactional analysis, but there is research behind what happens during your birth and the effects it can have on later life. And it's just something worth thinking about in terms of trying to find a why, which is always helpful, I think, to anxiety sufferers. Not putting the blame on somebody else or putting the blame on a situation, but trying to understand and have peace and compassion for ourselves and the way that we are, and not feeling so much hatred towards ourselves for what feels like an inability to function in normal society. When it's at its worst, that's what it feels like. So, for example, if your birth was very fast, if there were things like forceps involved, if it was a emergency C-section, things where there's trauma, things where there's some kind of stress of the mother, then that can link into your state as, you know, when you're earth side. And I just think that's quite interesting to think about. Maybe if you're aware of your birth story, just try and factor that into your anxiety. But like I said, somatic research isn't for everybody. I personally adore it, and I think I'm going to go along that route very much so. So, going back to the main story. I said I've been anxious my whole life. Now, this year in particular, this year, 2021, it still feels like this year. It is definitely January 2022, but, you know, never mind. What happened last year that made me lose control with my anxiety, really, was probably accumulation of factors that I continued to let get out of hand. One being my obsession with having more than one job, which, if you follow me on social media, you'll know has been a bit of a thing for me. I'm currently only on 1.5 jobs at the minute. The other one isn't making me money yet, but it will. There will be two jobs very soon, but I've done really well sticking with one. But that is a really bad sort of trait I have. And it's great being, you know, having a portfolio career, as my dad calls it, and it's given me so much experience. But also, you know, I would rather work three jobs in one day of sort of 4-hour bursts each than work a normal 9-to-5. That's just me, and that's just how I prefer to function, partly because of my ADHD and partly because focusing is really challenging for me and I get bored quite easily. But also, I think there's probably some insecurities around needing to feel enough, needing to feel super stimulated. I don't know, it's not time to go into it today, but I think I remember feeling massive stress around one particular job I was doing, which I absolutely loved, but it was teaching. I was teaching cooking clubs for primary school children and special needs children. It was super fun. However, I just kept accepting more classes and more classes and more classes till I was doing 3 a day and not having time to eat anything between, and feeling constantly stressed about having to get to the next one. And I just couldn't, say no. I couldn't, the boundaries, I just didn't have them. And along with that, I was doing another job working from home. So it was just, you know, I was getting up at 6 and by the end of the day I was exhausted. So I think part of the reason things got out of hand this year was because of that. And actually, one of the most stressful parts of that experience was deciding I needed to leave. I remember sitting in my car before I was going into a school and having a panic attack, and just because I knew that this wasn't sustainable. Almost the decision of knowing I needed to get out of that space. It's change, you know. Change is terrifying, especially for people who suffer from anxiety. We like things to stay the same. We like routine within certain situations. You know, I love to do different things on Saturdays, and that's, you know, no relation to the fact that I don't like to be uncertain about where my finances are coming from. You know, so, and I think anybody to some extent can feel a bit like that. So that was one of the reasons, one of the things that happened to take my anxiety overboard. The second thing, which I mentioned earlier, I think was whether it related to that, to the summer when I had my breakdown or not, I don't know. But the second most anxious part of my year was not even the miscarriage, it was actually when I was pregnant. When I was pregnant, which was, it was an unexpected pregnancy, and I was very happy about it, but it was also massively traumatic during the pregnancy. I was in hospital 3 or 4 days a week. It was a threatened miscarriage all the time. It wasn't necessarily a surprise when I did miscarry, but it didn't make the grief any less at all. And I will do another podcast about that, hopefully next week. So we'll see. I thought about doing it tonight, but it's still quite a sensitive subject with me, so I sort of need to be in the right frame of mind, understandably. So when I was pregnant, I was living alone at the time, and I was absolutely terrified that I was going to fall down the stairs and knock my head and bleed out. And I was terrified that I was going to have a heart attack and no one would know, or I was going to miscarry and no one would know, and I would just be in pain and pass out and I'd be dead on the floor. This is where the health anxiety starts to link in. This is where everything starts to come together, I guess, because all of those examples, all of those phobias I talked about are all health related. And it stems back, and I said this at the time when I was explaining it to somebody about why I feel so anxious about being on my own in the house and being unwell, is I had an endometriosal cyst, they call it endometrioma, I think, which was bloody painful, okay, to the point where I was sort of bleeding out on my bathroom floor, no clothes on because I was feverish, sort of, you know, vomiting, couldn't get to my phone because I couldn't move, and I was like, I need help. I crawled, sort of belly crawled to get my phone, which was on the windowsill. Rang my mum, who said, oh, it'll pass, it'll be fine, which didn't help. Then was like, I need to call an ambulance. And I've never done that before in my life for myself, but I did it. And I think I've grown up in sort of, because a lot of my family have been in medical professions, it's very much an attitude of, you're not going to hospital unless you're near death, you know, the A&E's misused, blah, 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 which is absolutely true. However, you know, there is a time and a place for the emergency services, and when you're on the floor bleeding out in agony with a fever and, you know, I was absolutely terrified at that time because I just thought, I thought my stomach's going to rupture. I was like, I've got appendicitis, my stomach's going to rupture, I'm going to die here, no one's going to know. Some strange phobia around nobody knowing that I'm dead. Maybe some deep thoughts go into that. So that's where I think the initial phobia comes from. Oh, and for the ending, I called the paramedics. My ex came home and unlocked the door, and they carried me to hospital. And I was in hospital for New Year's. That was a couple of years ago now, but it was not a fun experience. And I think I was actually fine when I was in hospital, because I was on super high pain meds and I was being monitored, and I felt, you know, that I was okay. I felt like I was in control. When I was in hospital, I felt in control of that situation, which obviously didn't feel that at home alone. So then when I was pregnant and had these fears again, they were so intense, I couldn't sleep. I was so paranoid about what could happen. I would just stay up just in case I tripped, and then I wouldn't leave the bed. I would tuck myself in and not leave the bed in case I tripped in the night and no one would know. And it was massively consuming, and I didn't want to take anything anxiety related because I didn't want to hurt the baby and I didn't know what I could and couldn't take. Bark rescue remedy, by the way, is fine to take if you're pregnant, which I learned after, helpful. And to be honest with you, my anxiety sort of did calm down in the last few weeks. It was after I had some blood work back that didn't look promising. I had a really awkward pregnancy where we really didn't know what was going on. No, the doctors didn't know, you know, I didn't know, my body didn't really know. So the blood work was definitely leaning on the it's not looking good side, and I suddenly felt like a massive amount of peace. I was like, I'm not in limbo anymore, you know, I still didn't know the outcome, but I, you know, cried and grieved when I got that blood work back, but I felt somehow in control. So yeah, I don't know really about that, about how it changed, but it did. So that's my second lot of anxiety. Now the third one, the biggie, the big guy. So I'd left the job. I was sort of grieving. Well, I'm always going to grieve losing my baby, but I guess the main initial intense depression had passed. And it was actually the week after I left my job when the football was on. And I dyed my hair sort of orangey red. I usually dye it pink or something for summer. And it was supposed to go pink, but it just went orange for some reason. And my therapist at the time was like, "Oh, orange is a very meaningful colour. Why did you dye it that colour?" And I was like, "It wasn't meant to be orange." So that was funny. But I look back now and I'm like, oh yeah, that time when I had orange hair and I got COVID and my lungs stopped and it was just horrendous. So I came down with the worst cold I've ever had in my life. I literally couldn't leave the house. I was trying to fill my face with tissues and stick them in every hole I could, which is just because I couldn't deal with it. And it was just awful. And I had, I think, 4 or 5 days of this really intense, full-on cold. And I tested, I got a PCR test, negative, lateral flow test every day, all negative. But the story of what happens next makes me question the validity of those tests. And maybe that's because I need a reason. Maybe it's that, or maybe it was actually COVID. So I lie, I was actually still teaching and I had that time off for when I was really, really poorly. So it was at the time when I was super anxious because I was like, I need to leave my job. And I told him the week before that I was leaving. So I was coming up to my last week. And the cold, 4 or 5 days, and it was like, got to that point where like, oh yeah, it's sort of on its way out now. And I'd been stuck in the house for all that time, and I came home from class and I was like, oh, do you know what, I'm going to take myself on a date, and I love doing this. So I got in the car, put the tunes on, and drove to, I think, Five Guys there, and went and like danced in the countryside and videoed it, because I love it. It makes me feel so much joy. And I was singing in the car, and on the way back, when I was singing in the car, I sort of suddenly felt my breath start to go. I was sort of gasping for air, and I was like, weird. And I just kept singing and took extra deep breaths. But I just thought, that's really unusual. And then as the week went on, it was just the next day that it happened. I was teaching a class and I suddenly again had that I can't breathe thing, and I didn't even have a cough. It just my lungs just stopped working. Well, obviously they didn't because I was still breathing, and I was like, I need to go to hospital right now. I actually managed to get an emergency doctor's appointment, and they gave me a blue inhaler to sort of give me relief, and said, oh yeah, it sounds like you've got a chest infection, here, have some antibiotics. But bear in mind, I wasn't coughing, but they'd listened to my chest and it sounded mucousy, I think. So that was that. And then I was in hospital 3 times that week, with the second time, again, I'd come back from school, and the third time I just stopped going into class. And that was then my last class. I didn't go back to school after that. And I was on the floor and was dragging myself to the door and called my now boyfriend and asked me to take me to hospital again, and they looked over me there. I did go on steroids at one point to help with that, and they just diagnosed me with a lower respiratory tract infection. And they didn't tell me this at the time, but they sent me a note back, sort of, they send you like a, I don't know, debrief of your time in hospital, and said on it, anxiety. Now, they had never said that to me there. If they had said that to me there, then my super closed off, in denial brain may have taken some advice and taken, been like, oh, well, do you give me some medication for it then, please? Because, you know, I am in a state. I need to, if that's what it is, I need to deal with this. But they didn't tell me, and I'm feeling a bit grievy about that. Please, if you're a doctor listening to this, don't be scared I'm going to react. I would really much rather know that I am suffering from a mental illness that I don't know about than you just tell me in a letter afterwards. So that was that. And I went to Cornwall afterwards to see my family. And by this point, everything about me was better apart from my breathing, to the point where I couldn't go on a walk without having to sit down. So we didn't really walk. I stayed in the house pretty much the whole time. My partner walked the dog. And it was just like, I just remember this period of my life as being absolutely horrendous, really, really horrendous, being sick. And, you know, when I was still ill with it, it was when we had the heat wave, and I was just lying on the sofa, and occasionally I'd roll over. That was it. I wouldn't even watch TV. I was that consumed with trying to breathe, you know, and there was the struggling to breathe, and then there was the absolutely paralyzing fear that my breathing was going to completely stop. Absolutely paralyzing. And I did not realize that I even had that anxiety for quite a while. And I'll get on to that. So I was in Cornwall and I was on the blue inhaler, and at this point an asthma nurse rang me and said, you know, Rebecca, we think your childhood asthma may have been re-triggered by the virus that you had. And again, wish that they'd called me the week before, but she said, you know, well, sorry, we've just been going through your paperwork and this has been missed out, this check has been missed out, so I'd like to put you back on inhalers. Which I felt really relieved about. I was like, oh, you know, anything that can help right now. I think I was, the whole of July was completely written off because I couldn't breathe, the whole of July. And I think this was at the very end of July now, and I was still in Cornwall for a few days, and then I was going to go home and pick up the inhalers. I had a night in Cornwall where I'd have like a good day and a bad day of breathing, and it got to an evening and I felt like I couldn't breathe again. My blue inhaler wasn't working, and I made my lovely boyfriend drive me to the middle of a hospital in the middle of the night in Cornwall and waited for a doctor to speak to me. And I told her that the blue inhaler wasn't working and that they were going to give me inhalers to help me with my breathing. And she said, there's nothing wrong. She listened to my chest and listened to what I was telling her. She said, if the blue inhaler isn't working, then it suggests that it's not actually to do with your asthma. And I think sort of since that appointment, I do think I do have asthma. Because I sort of get a phlegmy cough. I still have it every now and then now, and this never happened before, and I don't think that is anxiety related. But, and you know, I'm on the brown inhaler now, which is great, and I'm cut down when I think I can handle it and put up when I can't. And this woman saying to me, she was like, you know, anxiety can trigger very, very real symptoms of your throat tightening, of you feeling like you can't breathe, of you having shortness of breath. And I explained to her the type of symptoms I had with the breathing, in that it wasn't necessarily coming from my lungs, it was coming from my throat. And I felt that my throat was closing, and I felt that my throat was somehow smaller than it was. And she said, you know, I think that this is anxiety sort of thing. And I was a bit, if you're an health anxiety sufferer like me, you probably know the feeling. I was a bit put off, a bit annoyed that she hadn't diagnosed me with some crazy disorder there and then and given me loads of pills to make me feel better that probably wouldn't have worked anyway. But it planted a seed in my brain which would then eventually save me. So I left that, and the next thing that happened is my lovely boyfriend, I think a couple of days later, was like, we've been to the hospital sort of 3 times in the last 2 weeks, and they've sent you away every time with nothing. Is there something there maybe that you're perhaps not aware of? Do you think there is something more to what you're feeling? And again, I was very dismissive, very put off by it. How dare he not see my health problems as they were? And it's massively frustrating when you are experiencing a really debilitating symptom, whatever that may be, and not being acknowledged that it's existing. And in some ways, it felt like people were saying it's not actually happening, when I'm telling you now, it 100% happened. I'm very aware that it happened and happens. All these symptoms, these physical symptoms, your body can absolutely react the same way as it could do to a physical trauma as it will do to a emotional, psychological trauma. This is something that this episode taught me over summer, is that the power of your mind to influence your body's behavior is beyond belief, is beyond reckoning, is beyond, I think, even what science knows. I'm sure it is what science knows, but it feels like something that isn't talked about, how powerful the body can be, how much it can change everything that you do. It can, and I learned this then on my yoga course that I went on later, it can literally tighten your muscles. It can store trauma in places in your body that then facilitate pain. There's so much your body can do if you aren't recognizing and healing and dealing with the psychological stuff. So we're still a week later. I've been on my inhalers, they're making a difference, and I feel like I can breathe again, to the point where I'm back dancing in my living room and I'm feeling great. And I'm like, finally, we're on the way up. I told my Instagram followers, look, you know, thank you for worrying about me. I'm on the way up now, dancing around the room in a frilly skirt. And I felt physically, I felt like, finally, this has been such a long journey. I think it'd been 6 weeks, maybe not quite 6 weeks, about 5 weeks at that point. And then I had a very minor argument with my boyfriend. And like just like a normal thing. And bear in mind, he'd had to put up with me being like unable to even get off the sofa for weeks and weeks, let alone the massive paranoia that I was presenting. And I lost it. I absolutely lost it. And the next day I was up again with not my lungs this time, but my heart, palpitations, tightness in my chest, feeling like I couldn't breathe, the crushing pain. And I was like, what is going on? Because I just got my breath back and now my body's reacting in a different way. This doesn't make sense anymore. And I spent sort of 2 days feeling like that, and the sweating and the not being able to eat, and just, excuse me for being too much information, but my bowels just had no control. I just, everything. And my body was in fight or flight mode. And this is what happens when you've got anxiety, and especially when you've got anxiety for a really long period of time, a chronic mental illness that affects you physiologically. And a chronic mental illness in any sense, but the long-term effects of that can do real damage to your immune system, to your way of thinking, way of processing, and way of existing. And, you know, my poor body had been through so much. And I just woke up one morning and I was like, that's it. I need help. And I rang the doctor. They put me on antidepressants, which act as anti-anxiety as well. And they started me on 20 micrograms of citalopram, which I think, you know, although I had quite an extreme case of anxiety at the time, I think owing to what happened next, I would have been better starting on 10 and building myself up. Because I had massive, massive reaction to the antidepressants, which I've been on before, by the way, sort of 10 years ago. And so thought they'd be all right. I was on 10 micrograms then. I'm now on 30. And I went on those. And because my body, one of the side effects, the possible side effects of being on this medication is being more anxious, which at that point in time, I didn't think was physically possible, but it was. And I endured what I can only describe as a week of absolute hell, of absolute hell on earth. I couldn't leave the bed. I couldn't sleep. I woke up with heart palpitations and sweating, and I couldn't eat anything. I was so skinny, I could see all my bones because I could not eat a thing because I was scared I was going to choke if I swallowed anything. And constantly, one of my sort of major things was all I did, I must have done it hundreds of times a day, was Google symptoms. What could this be? You know, WebMD, put your symptoms in, and then researching different diseases, being like, this is what I've got. Not acknowledging that this was anxiety, just deciding I'm really ill, I'm really, really sick, there's no way I'd be reacting like this. She put me on diazepam, and I started off on a lower dose, and then I called back the next day and said it's not strong enough. And then she put me in a higher one. And I honestly attribute diazepam, which is a sedative, as being one of the major, major parts of my recovery. And if this is a route that is an option for you, it is addictive, so you have to be quite careful with how you use it. But for me, it really is, and it still is an option for me. It really is something that I use in emergency situations, which thankfully rarely ever happen now. But I just don't know how I would have survived without it. And I know that sounds like a massive exaggeration. It's just anxiety. What do you mean? You don't know how you would have survived? I mean, I would have probably driven myself to a point where I didn't think that life was worth living. It was that torturous, experiencing what I was experiencing with the anxiety, that I can't even describe it to anybody without, like, I absolutely had no idea what serious anxiety meant before then. Like, I'd had anxiety my whole life. I knew what it was to feel anxious and tense and blah, 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 but I didn't know what it meant to literally have crippling, debilitating, can't leave your bed, can't eat anything, you know, physically having massive reactions. I had no idea what that meant until I was in it. And, yeah, I had sort of a week really of reacting to the antidepressant. And one of the other things that really, really helped me was, and I don't know the name of the website now, but it was, I was researching the drug, researching citalopram, and there were people on there who said exactly the same thing. I had a week of hell. It gets better after the second week, after the first week, and it gets better each week, and sort of so many people experiencing exactly the same thing that I was experiencing on this medication. And I felt so reassured by them. I would, again, check these messages, go on this forum several times a day to get that reassurance back that I needed, get that hope back that I needed, feel that sense of it's going to work, I've just got to keep going. I'd like to add here as well, you do not need to sit through an antidepressant or a psychiatric medication. That does not work for you. You do not need to sit through that. For me, I felt so desperate and so in trouble that I was like, I don't have the time to come off one and go through this with another for it to potentially react the same way. I only have the time to just hope that this works. So that is why I stuck with it. And the diazepam as well. The first day she gave me the diazepam, all I wanted to do was be outside where I could see trees and see open air. So I went into my garden and I lay on, got sort of astroturf with a blanket, and I had the diazepam and I had a timer on my phone for when the next time I could take them was. And I did that all day. I didn't leave. I just sat on the lawn. I lay on the lawn, and was the first day I began to feel calmer and began to feel way more at peace, I think, with the situation, with what was going on. I wouldn't say way more at peace. It was still extremely traumatic, up there in worst things I've ever been through, if not the second worst thing I've ever been through after my dog Luna dying, which I talked about. There's a YouTube on that, if anybody's interested in having a really good cry, because that was a major trauma for me. So yes, that was just one hell of an experience, and I really didn't see what was happening until I was out of it. I really didn't see how traumatic that experience itself was until a few months ago, probably. And I found talking about it really difficult. I found when I said, you know, I had a breakdown, I had a mental breakdown, I had a nervous breakdown, whatever you want to call it, I found myself feeling massively physically triggered by it. And this is stuff I would never have picked up on before, and I'll go into what happened next to help me with all of this. But it was a real testing time for me. So another thing, the thing that again was a massive help of getting out of this breakdown, really, was, you know, obviously the medication began to kick in. I was on day 6, so I felt like I was nowhere near anything working, or my anxiety was at its absolute worst. And I was supposed to go on an intensive yoga course to qualify as a yoga teacher that I'd set up for myself back in May of that year. And I was like, I don't think I can do this. And I emailed the lady the night before and said, look, you know, I'm having this breakdown, I've been really poorly, I don't think I can do this. Is it refundable? And she said, no, not refundable, you can transfer your dates though. And I was like, well, I've got time off specifically for this, I can't do anything else. And luckily I had a call with my therapist at the time, who said to me, what would you be doing if you didn't go on that course? And I was like, I'm just going to be sitting here in this bed waiting for this to pass. And he was like, I'm not going to tell you what to do, Rebecca, I just want you to think on that. And I did, and I had like a little burst of being myself after that call, and I went around the house sticking post-it notes up that said, you are in charge, as in I am in charge of my anxiety, because I was so confident in that moment that I'd be able to get up and do it, I'd be able to go to the yoga course and I'd be fine. And I woke up the next morning, I had to get up at 4, I think, to leave, because I was travelling an hour and back to get there, an hour each way, which honestly ended up being massively cathartic and part of the healing process as well. Everything just fell into place so beautifully. But I woke up at 4 and I was like, I can't do it. And I was like, yes, you can. And I was really, really fighting with myself. And they do say with anxiety, it's the one thing where you actually have to do the opposite of what your body's telling you to do. And, you know, I'm very much, listen to your body, listen to your gut, you know, find how you feel and follow that. But anxiety is the one thing where that does not apply. And it was really in that moment that I felt that. And I took the diazepam as soon as I got up. And by the way, you shouldn't really drive on them if you don't know how you react to them. And this was the first times, I think, on my super high strength diazepam. And it was really challenging, kind of navigating when I could drive, when I could take these sedatives, if they were going to make me tired, if they're going to make me fall asleep when I was on the course and stuff. But I did, and I figured it out pretty quick, and it all worked really nicely. I only had to take the diazepam for 3 days on that course. That was it. And then it was, from there, it was once a week for probably a month or so, and after that, just as and when I've needed it, which is rarely, if at all. And I mean, I think training to be a yoga teacher, specifically with a teacher I had who was really focused even on alignment and how the body works and the physical aspects of yoga, taught me so much about myself. And from there I went to have a somatic therapist, as well as having a sort of psychotherapist, and I learned so much about how the body reacts, like I was sort of explaining earlier, about all the tension I was holding in my body. So my yoga teacher picked up on it straight away. Obviously she knew my history. I was only with 3 other girls, and everybody was so understanding. And honestly, that experience, it taught me the meaning of trusting people. I'd been working from home for, apart from in schools with little children who are wonderfully innocent and wonderfully naive, but not exactly adult company. I hadn't been sort of working with real human beings for over 2 years. And being with a group of people and we worked with it as a team, it completely awakened my sense of love for humanity. Gosh, that sounds preachy as hell, but it really did. And 2 weeks in, I quit my corporate job and now work as a waitress part-time I'm working full-time at the minute. I'll give myself the credit for that, just for some extra cash. But whilst I set up my yoga business, and it has flowed since then. It has been a healing journey since then. But learning about my body's reactions to things, you know, my yoga teacher would say, yeah, your shoulders are really tight, you're carrying all your trauma in your shoulders. So something, my favourite fact about yoga, my favourite fact about the human body from yoga even, is that if we think about when we're back to prehistoric times, when our big threats were, you know, bears or tigers or lions or whatever, it was an animal threat or a tribe who could, you know, spear you and kill you. Our biggest source of worry in our bodies would be the places that didn't have bones to protect us. So thinking about the abdomen here, sort of the lower abdomen as well, where the hips are. And there's a muscle there called psoas, which spelt funny, P-S-O-A-S. So do have a look into it if it's something you're thinking about. And also our sort of neck and throat, so we can carry tension there and in our shoulders and our chest as well. And often if you've got shoulders that tend to roll themselves forward, it's your chest that's actually tight. And if you want to test that, because I was doing it myself this morning because I've been trying to figure out where is my shoulder pain coming from, if you press your pectoral muscles, if you're a lady, you're going above your boobs but below your collarbone, if you press there, if it's feeling kind of tense, if you're feeling some pain there, then you probably need to stretch them out. Because our bodies just go, no, 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 no. We don't want any of these spaces vulnerable. And they just tighten and tighten and tighten and tighten with our trauma to protect our neck, protect our throat. And I found this with sleeping. I tended to sleep with my neck and shoulders rounded and my chin to my chest, protecting my body was subconsciously protecting my throat, protecting my neck. And obviously my throat has been the place where I've had the massive issues, where I've had that anxiety symptom, which is a physical symptom of my throat closing. And there is actual science. Again, please do the research yourself. It takes so much fun out of podcasting when I have to link everything. I did find a research study about this, so I'm not lying, where your body can genuinely contract your muscles in your throat. Yeah, psychological stress, it actually does contract them. So you're not even constrict them. You're not even imagining that experience. It is a real experience happening to you. It's not something you're making up. It is real. A lot of that sort of has come from my throat, and I've got a lot of work to do around my throat, my neck, my shoulders. Then the psoas, going back to the hips again, this is something that we would work on with hip flexor stretches. I mean, this for non-yogis, none of it will make any sense, so I won't go there. But we had a day where we did the splits. We worked on doing the splits, and my lovely teacher was sort of saying, yeah, you know, your psoas is really tight, we've got to do some work on your psoas. I was like, oh, it's going to take ages, I've got so much trauma, you know. Before even this year, I carry an awful lot on my shoulders, and I have an awful lot of scars and wounds, as many of us do, and it's rubbish for people who've been through a lot. It doesn't make life easy at all, and I think we're all very brave if you're one of those people. It was sort of the second week in the course, again coming to the end of the course, and we did a day on splits, and I went first, and I knew my lovely teacher sort of wanted me to really go through the experience I did when I was practicing the splits. Please don't try it at home on your own. I had a very, very experienced teacher helping with it. And the process that I went through, I was in so much pain with the splits, but it felt good. I can't even explain how that works, but all that my body was doing was releasing the tension there. And I work on it an awful lot now, and I don't really need to as much because, you know, my body's realised that I'm not going to let it hold trauma anywhere anymore. So it's sort of, it has to think, outside of the box a little bit, which is why it's in my shoulders at the minute and my neck, because it's like, oh, she won't stretch us out. I'm like, yeah, I will. All right, I will. So it's fascinating learning that about your body, and that was all through yoga and through somatic therapy as well. And even picking up pain points in your body where you, things you didn't recognize before, like even if I said to you now, relax your shoulders, did you even know that you were had them tight, you know? If I said to you now, here's a funny one, unclench your bum. Did you even know that you were clenching it? You know, there are so many things that happen to our body as a result of us being on high alert all the time that we don't even recognize that we are causing damage to ourselves, you know? So it's just, it's been so informative for me to help tune into my body. And I really want to recommend somatic therapy to anybody experiencing health anxiety or anxiety in general. I think learning about your body and finding your triggers and finding your physical triggers. So often we'll block out the emotional ones because we don't have boundaries with ourselves. We're like, oh, no, I can handle it. I can handle this conversation. I can handle this, you know, ridiculous 16-hour work day. I'm fine. I can handle it. And then our body's going, no, you cannot. But if we listen to our bodies will often let us know first if our minds aren't quite there to deal with them. If we pick up, oh, hang on, that was tension there in XYZ part of my body, you know, oh, I'm feeling my breathing getting a bit funny again, or oh, my jaw is another one, you know, relax your jaw. If I say this to you now, relax your jaw. Maybe you're holding tension there. This is, you know, it's linked to the throat. Also, a lot of conversations happen in that area of our body, a lot of conversations that maybe we don't like having, we don't want to be having, we wish we'd never had. You know, your body holds stuff there, it remembers. And it's been so, I keep going on about it, but it's been so helpful for me to recognize that. And there's small things you can do, like massaging the muscles as well as doing the stretches. But I think as a start, find the triggers and tune in, really tune in to your body. Tune into your breathing. If you get a chance to do a breathwork course of some kind, and I will be doing them at some point later on down the line, breathing into your abdomen, well, into your diaphragm, it is, if you do take a deep breath in now through your nose and into your diaphragm, which is sort of, if you put your hand above your belly button and fill it as far, like as high as you can, as full as you can, and if you hold it there and then release, what we do when we breathe into our diaphragm is let our vagus nerve that controls a hell of a lot more than I would like to admit, we let it know that we're okay and it's safe and we're fine and we're not doing our shallow breathing that happens with anxiety, which we don't even recognize we're doing, but it's, you know, not even fast perhaps. Maybe it doesn't seem fast to you, but we're not breathing into our belly. We're breathing into our chest, and that's not a full oxygenated breath. We're not getting the best deal that we could get there. Our breath is so powerful, and recognizing that and being able to start doing work with that, even if you just take a minute a day to do it, you're training your body to remember what it feels like to feel calm. Another thing my somatic therapist taught me is to have a point in your body that feels safe. So think about where in your body feels safe. So for me, the first thing that came to mind was my feet. I'm often, if I'm sitting down, so I'm sitting down now, cross-legged, I often grab my feet, and I never really thought about why until I realized that my feet feel safe to me. They are my grounding point. They are the one thing that is permanent, you know, in movement, in motion. It's usually at the bottom of me, you know. It's not even permanent, is it? Nothing's permanent. So scratch that. But I trust my feet and I feel safe with them. And so she said, okay, now think of a time where your feet are feeling like at the most safe that they can be, or find your safe place in your mind and pop your feet in that place. So for me, my favorite place in the world is a resort in Thailand in Phuket, and I have been there many times, luckily. I'm very fortunate, and I can remember feeling for feeling, you know, touch. I can remember the touch, the smells, the taste, the weather, the feel, the temperature, everything about the beach at that hotel and the white sand. I know exactly how it feels on my feet. And when I'm having a moment where I need to zone out, because my anxiety is picking up again, I can just touch my feet or think of my feet and imagine those feelings back again. Feel myself in that sand, the warm sand going over my feet, perhaps the sea lapping up against them, you know, perhaps put my whole body in that position if I feel comfortable enough to do so. And it's a real good way of grounding myself and getting back into where I need to be, which is calm. It's a lot to ask for from someone who has anxiety. It's not an instant fix. And after I recognized that I had a health anxiety and my medication started to work so well, I don't know how I coped without it all those years, I started doing meditation every single day, yoga every single day, breath work every single day. And, you know, I'd still have down days and I'd still panic and I'd be like, oh my God, what's happening? Why is it not working? And what I've learned is that things like meditation, breath work, mindfulness, they are fantastic, brilliant, perfect, amazing tools for managing your anxiety. They are not the cure. You are the cure. You can be the only thing that cures your anxiety for good. I'm not there yet at all, probably nowhere near. But I'm a massive, massive step closer than what I was in July and August. And I'm so grateful for that, you know, and I think you have to see the small things as rewards. So this is a really silly one, but because I felt a lot of stress around my lungs. I felt that any pressure there was wrong. The first day I wore a bra again, that was a massive deal for me. That was a step forward because I was okay with something restricting me there. So it's little things like that, little things that count as progress, you know. And it's not always going to be progress is up, 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 up. It's going to be up and down like a roller coaster all the time. You know, good days and bad days. That's just part of it, I'm afraid. And it's rubbish that we've got the anxiety. But it's just trying to get to the root cause of your anxiety, of where it's come from and how you can get rid of it for good. That is still something that I'm working on. And I'm sure we'll do another podcast on that later on the line. But I just wanted to share with you my experience of health anxiety and some sort of tips that have helped me manage it better, to the point now where, you know, I feel fine. I feel like I don't know how I existed before my medication, even in everyday life. I used to wake up and really have to fight to be okay, be alive and get up every day. And I don't think I realized how much I fought until I was on that medication. Medication is not the route for everybody at all. And I'm not going to sit here and be like, oh, it's the only way. Absolutely not. And before any of this, I was super like, no, holistic health all the way. And believe me, I think I spent £200 on various over-the-counter natural herbal anxiety remedies when I was at my worst, which all, you know, in effect took the edge off sometimes, but nothing like what my antidepressants and the sedatives have done for me. And perhaps one day I'll come off them. I'm not under any pressure with myself to do that. I'm very comfortable with staying on them. They don't give me any weird side effects. I'm very lucky in that sense. Obviously the horrible side effects at the beginning were, maybe that was my payment. Maybe that's what I had to sacrifice in order to get them to work. I don't know. But I think it's just so rubbish for people going through it. And please just know that I know, and not everybody will understand. Not everyone will know. And, you know, lucky them for not being sympathetic towards us, because they don't get it. They didn't have to experience what we had to experience. And, you know, my God, it's traumatic in itself going through the anxiety and having your body go through it as well. So just be compassionate and kind with yourself for having to deal with all of that and still getting through it. You know, I think you should have so much pride for how much strength you have to get to deal with something like that, you know? I think that's probably all I'm going to say on today's podcast. And it's super nice to be back. And let's see where it goes. Love you lots.